building bridges, not walls, with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Now, an agenda for workers' rights under the Biden administration with Mark Gaston Pierce, executive director of Georgetown Law Center's Workers' Rights Institute.
Professor Pierce was former board member and chairman of the National Labor Relations Board, who served two terms concluding in August 2018.
Professor, one of the things I'm interested in, it's a newly formed entity, the Georgetown Law Center's Workers' Rights Institute. If we could start by talking about the kind of work that is done there.
The Workers' Rights Institute is a wonderful opportunity for me because the frustration that I had when I was with the board and as an advocate for workers outside the board in the private sector is that knowledge of the board is very limited by workers. The board's outreach is woefully inadequate. Those people who have rights that can be pursued do not know those rights. And with the downturn in union density, unions are not going to be the entity that will be providing the education necessary for workers to know what needs to be done. So when I took this position with the Workers' Rights Institute, it was newly formed. I'm molding it myself. My goal is to empower workers, to educate workers with respect to the rights that they do have, advocate for better labor law reform, and match those that have the expertise with those with the needs that can be serviced. I look at the entity as doing three things: the reason, the right, and the way. The reason being there has to be some kind of context that workers have to understand, particularly workers of color, to understand why there's a significance and an importance to have workers' rights and how it follows a similar path to civil rights. The right is people don't know their rights. They need to be exposed to it a little bit better, and we are hoping to facilitate that. And then lastly is the way. Well, now that you know your rights, what are you going to do with them? Are there strategies that can be deployed so that you can best effectuate those rights such that they exist? And parenthetically, the laws that protect workers are woefully inadequate. But to the extent that they do exist, let's figure out how to use them most effectively.
The conjuncture of race and class, that one cannot talk about racial justice without talking about economic empowerment. Is that part of the function and the imperative to bring together for the realization of workers' rights in any context?
Most definitely. Many workers of color feel that, well, just think about it. You're a single mother. You're trying to get by. You're African American or Latina. You have kids to take care of. You're frustrated with the way you're being treated at work, but you don't have time or you don't think that you have any power with regard to your circumstance. Yet your sons may be getting hassled by the police because of their minority status or their race, and you're dealing with those kind of abuses in society. You know that there's a real injustice there, and it's a civil injustice. To be able to bridge that gap or to connect the fact that it all relates, your plight as a worker as well as the kind of struggle that you're experiencing as a person of color, all have a common theme, and those themes have to be connected. With concerted action, there is power. There's not only power in the workplace, there's political power that comes from that.
What is the National Labor Relations Board? Because I'll bet you 8 out of 10 workers have never heard of it. And then I wonder to what extent it exists in the politic of it is at the behest of an administration, and therefore it has a kind of rigidity based on the politic of the administration.
Well, the National Labor Relations Act was enacted in 1935. It was part of the New Deal. FDR put it in, Franklin Roosevelt, to create some labor peace because there were strikes and labor conflicts that were going on all over the place. And FDR wanted the United States to go in that direction because he had to figure out ways in order to infuse income into the country in order for them to get out of this bleak depression. He knew that the only way would be to get employees on par, or at least even the playing field, in order for them to earn a decent wage. It was created in order for people to be able to engage in protected concerted activity. Now, that sounds like a mouthful, but all it is, it means that two or more people who are acting for mutual aid or protection in the workplace are protected by federal law. So many people think that there is a constitutional right that one has in the workplace, only to learn bitterly that a workplace is a dictatorship, and the only rights that employees have is as a result of the statutes that were created to protect those rights. These rights transcend just being unionized. If you have several employees complaining about the lighting in a facility, or the air conditioning, or the ergonomics of the furniture, and they complain as a group with regard to those kind of conditions that deal with the workplace, an employer cannot lawfully retaliate against them. So they act as if they were a union, even though they are not, under the Act. It was an independent agency, and an agency made up of 5 members, all appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. When the president is of a particular party, that president gets to pick 3 of the 5 of his or her own party and 2 from the other party. When there's a change of administration, the balance changes, and the philosophies of the National Labor Relations Board changes as well. Now, what does it mean by philosophy changes? Well, policy is decided by case decision-making. And though the Act itself is a rigid document, it's subject to different interpretations. If it's interpreted in a very conservative way, then you see a swing in decisions that go against workers and oftentimes go against unions as well. Under the Biden administration, it is our hope that that pendulum will swing back in favor of worker protections. But here is the rub. Presently, there is a 1 Democratic vacancy and only 1 Democrat currently on the board. The other board members, the 3 other board members, are all Republicans. So at least until, though Biden will be in office, there will be a Republican majority on the National Labor Relations Board. Another footnote, the president designates who is the chairman. The chairman is not determined by the Senate. So as soon as the president is in office, the president will designate the sitting Democrat as the chairman, either permanently or in an acting capacity.
Going back to the NLRB and indeed the entire Labor Department, we could probably spend a half an hour just talking about how Trump decimated any kind of usefulness of the NLRB and Labor Department. But going forward, is it enough just to get back to where it was? What are changes have to be made, and what kind of changes can be made or should be made?
The problem is, from its outset, in 1935, when the National Labor Relations Act was created, it was not really fit for duty. Certainly, it had promise, and there were a lot of things that it was able to do in order to ensure labor peace, but bit by bit, it was constantly tweaked so that its effectiveness was reduced. What do we have to do in that regard? There has to be teeth put into the remedy. There has to be self-enforcing determinations. People don't realize that after that long period of filing a charge, having it litigated before the board, having the board make a determination after it has taken into consideration the administrative law judge's decision, the board order is still not enforced unless the board takes that order to a federal court to get it enforced. The protracted nature of that whole process causes a worker to be totally frustrated in terms of what kind of justice a worker can receive. And to add insult to injury, if a terminated employee has not set out to try to find interim employment to mitigate his or her loss because of the injustices suffered from the employer's unlawful acts, that employee would be penalized by having that portion of their period of unemployment reduced because of their failure to search for work. So the employer is reaping a benefit from its unlawful conduct. Now, you clearly have to restructure an agency in order for it to have that kind of effect. Finally, so much of the current business plans with the advent of ride shares and DoorDash and companies like that and algorithm-driven businesses, with all of that, to have a policy that says if you're an independent contractor, you're not an employee that is protected by the National Labor Relations Act, is a gaping loophole that can render the act completely ineffective just by way of an employer's business plan to escape from those kind of bargaining obligations.
What are the possibilities, or what do you think should be done under the Biden administration to strengthen the laws, both in regard to the NLRB, but also the functions of the Labor Department and other labor laws itself?
Legislatively, I think there are several things that needs to be done. There has to be an effort to give some more teeth to the remedies in the National Labor Relations Act, because right now the current remedy is only a make-whole remedy. So somebody could be out of work for 2 or 3 years because of an unlawful activity. And if finally found guilty and the employer has to pay to the piper, all the employer has to do is pay the individual back his or her wages plus whatever relevant interest there are. There's no punitive damages or anything like that. Some cases, if the employer had acted in a way that did not result in anybody getting terminated, but had been completely abusive to the point where employees had been totally intimidated from organizing and creating a union, oftentimes the remedy is just a simple matter of a notice. Those kind of things have to be changed. There needs to be a private right of action. So employees, if they're stuck in the morass of cases not going forward, they can have the option of proceeding directly in court and getting court enforcement of those remedies. As I mentioned before, the board itself needs to have the authority to be able to enforce its orders. There should be a requirement that domestic workers and farm workers be brought back and covered by the National Labor Relations Act. I think a lot of your audience may not realize it, but farm workers and domestic workers have no protections under the National Labor Relations Act. We hear a lot about farm worker unions and farm worker protections, but those are based on state laws. California has a law that protects farm workers, but it's not a national law. The National Labor Relations Act was intentionally designed to exclude farm workers from the act, and that's a vestige of slavery. In order for them to get the Southern Democrats in 1935 to agree and to vote in favor of the National Labor Relations Act, there had to be a compromise made. Wagner and his people had to cut a deal where farm workers and domestic servants be excluded from the coverage of the act. Why? Because the Southern Democrats were using the last vestiges of slavery, i.e. sharecroppers and domestic servants, as something that they would never give up because that was held sacred in the South. Consequently, they were excluded from the National Labor Relations Act. That has to change. I could go on. There's a lot.
Well, we will go on. But some of the things that I'm also interested in, Professor Pierce, again, under the Biden administration and the issue of workers' rights, some of the areas where there has been the greatest suffering, along with the things that you've just mentioned, there's the issue, of course, of the minimum wage. There's the issue of people in the gig economy, which encompasses all kinds of industries, essentially being labeled as more or less independent contractors and having virtually no rights at all, to the terrible issues of COVID relief. And then there's the broad issue of the PRO Act, which should make it easier for workers to organize. What are the critical issues for workers' rights that you'd like to see advanced and how under the Biden administration?
For these critical issues to be addressed in a meaningful way, they would have to be addressed through labor law reform. And labor law reform is not an easy task, particularly when you have a Senate that may not be a Democratic majority. And even with a Democratic majority, elected representatives take money from corporations and different entities. So I'm not clear that all Democratic senators would be on the same page with respect to the labor law reforms that are needed. The Protecting the Right to Organize Act that has been passed in the House is an amazing first step in that regard. Certain aspects of it that are essential to labor law reform, including the things that I have already mentioned, like meaningful enforcement of penalties, monetary penalties, punitive damages, streamlining the access to justice for workers who suffer retaliation, authorizing a private right to action for violators of workers' rights, giving workers the power to override the right to work state laws, getting rid of the loopholes that exist in that joint employer regulation. There has to be a consistent definition that is handled across the board with respect to what constitutes a joint employer and an independent contractor. The legislation would need to prevent employers from interfering with union elections. A union election is about whether or not employees want to unionize. An employer has no business being in that mix. It is the relationship between the employee and the union, or the employees amongst themselves, to decide whether or not they want to band together. The fact that they even give the employer standing is misguided completely. There are so many things that need to be done to facilitate collective bargaining. We have to remember that the preamble of the National Labor Relations Act says that it was designed to facilitate collective bargaining. So when you have a National Labor Relations Board as it currently exists, the chairman giving a speech about how we got to do what we can to protect job creators. The National Labor Relations Act didn't talk about that. It talked about facilitating collective bargaining. Currently, they have under consideration a rulemaking that would exclude students from becoming unionized. So there needs to be legislation that sets forth those kinds of and a certain degree of rigidity in policy so that the policy is not subject to negative interpretation.
Professor Pierce, are there any cases that you're particularly working on that you would like to talk about in terms of workers' rights through the Georgetown Law Center's Workers' Rights Institute?
Right now, in collaboration with the Kalmanovitz Initiative, which is another Georgetown entity on its main campus, and the Harrison Institute, we are trying to put together a consortium called the Just Purchasing Consortium, where we hope to use the purchasing powers of universities to set standards for which food suppliers must comply with in terms of fair labor standards. And that was precipitated by the horrendous conditions that meatpacking facilities subjected their employees to. And it is our hope that that'll get launched and be widespread among the university community. And then we would hope that it would expand to other entities as well.
Is there anything of critical importance that you think that we should have touched on and didn't?
Well, I want to apprise everybody of the Right to Flexibility and Employees Protection Act that has been sponsored by Senator Patty Murray and Senator Sherrod Brown and Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, which deals with a lot of things that are frustrating right now. Proposition 22 is a devastating blow to workers.
That was in California about mostly the Uber and Lyft and DoorDash and so on, right?
That's right. And it was because of all of the money that Uber and Lyft threw at lobbying efforts and misinformation that legislation was passed, which defeated the test that protected employees in terms of defining what constitutes an employee. This legislation would be national legislation that would strengthen the employee test, which is also called the ABC test, which would give a presumption of employee status that the employer would have to rebut in order to classify people otherwise. And this classification would be a standalone violation. And there would be a presumption of retaliation if an employee has been deemed misclassified as a independent contractor and denied benefits as a result. This is a detailed proposal. I would like to see it put into effect because that is the kind of thing that would ensure that the National Labor Relations Act or what it hopes to become will remain viable. I got into this field primarily because of my high regard for the National Labor Relations Act, and I have been an advocate for it being strengthened for the entirety of my 30-plus year career. And I hope that we can see a day under this administration where it gets bolstered and employees are truly protected, workers are truly protected.
Well, I thank you for leaving us with that, and we hope as well. And it would be a fitting tribute to you. And you lead me to say, you know, workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains and a world to win. And thanks for creating the kind of institute, the Georgetown Law Center's Workers' Rights Institute, that will instruct workers on their rights and make us plow ahead for their realization. It really has been a good time speaking with you, Professor Mark Gaston Pierce.
Thank you very much.
We've been speaking with Mark Gaston Pierce, Executive Director of Georgetown Law Center's Workers' Rights Institute.
You've been listening to Building Bridges, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Stay strong and stay well.